This public radio podcast is supported by the Society for Human Resource Management, meeting the challenges of a changing world, online at shrm.org, and by KeyBank Capital Markets, specializing in corporate and investment banking solutions for established and growing mid-sized companies. Visit key.com/KBCM.
Farewell, Bear Stearns.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. In a couple of hours, shareholders of Bear Stearns will sit down to vote on the J.P. Morgan buyout. It shouldn't take long. Even though Bear investors are only getting $10 a share, remember, J.P. Morgan's first offer was $2 for a stock that hit $154 last year. Still, the collapse of Bear Stearns after 85 years on Wall Street is no small thing. More now from Jill Barchet.
Back in March, Bear Stearns shareholders griped the bank was being given away for a pittance. Dick Bove is a banking analyst at Ladenburg Thalmann. He says things have quieted down as the 85-year-old investment bank has continued to lose customers and money.
The recognition has now dawned on the people at Bear Stearns that, in fact, the company is totally bankrupt and insolvent, and that essentially $10 is certainly better than what they really deserve, which is nothing.
J.P. Morgan wants to erase the taint of Bear Stearns' financial losses. It's stripping the Bear Stearns brand off of almost everything, even the company's high-tech building, which J.P. Morgan is moving into this summer. The Bear brand survives on just a single division, which manages money for wealthy individuals. In New York, I'm Jill Barchet for Marketplace.
When times are tough, I guess people buy in bulk. This morning, Costco said profits jumped 32% last quarter. Gains today in the overseas stock markets. The Nikkei finished 3% higher, its best day in 2 months. Mainly, it's the yen losing value, which helps Japanese exporters. Fractional gains in the rest of Asia and Europe so far. The Dow starts off at 12,594 after adding 45 points yesterday. The Scripps National Spelling Bee begins today in Washington. My favorite part of the bee is when the kids act like kids.
Sardoodledum.
Sardoodledum.
Well, it is a funny word. It means contrived melodrama, something the spelling bee is not. It's the real thing, which is probably why it's become an international business. John Dimsdale has more from Washington.
Thanks to an Oscar-nominated documentary, a best-selling novel, a hit Broadway musical, and a feature-length movie, spelling bees are hip, and not just in the U.S.
We have inquiries from China and Taiwan and South Korea and Malaysia.
The director of the National Spelling Bee, Paige Kimball, says there are 22 non-native English speakers among this year's finalists, competing for a $40,000 first-place prize. That includes students from Ghana and South Korea.
The ultimate mark of having mastered the English language is to be able to say that you're a champion speller. And so they want to demonstrate their mastery by participating in spelling bees.
For the third year in a row, the ABC TV network will broadcast Friday's final competition live. And for the international audience, ESPN360.com will stream today's quarterfinals live on their website. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
You're listening to The Morning Report for Thursday, May 29th on Marketplace.org. Today, Christian Dior dropped actress Sharon Stone from its ad campaign in China. That's a smart move. Stone recently said China's earthquake might have been bad karma for the country's treatment of Tibet. China called Stone the enemy of all mankind. Stephen Beard has more on how Dior is handling this.
Sharon Stone had suggested the Sichuan earthquake was the result of bad karma. She implied the Chinese were being punished over Tibet. The remark provoked outrage in China, and Christian Dior is bearing the brunt. The company uses the Hollywood actress as the face of its Capture Total skincare line. Its Chinese headquarters has been inundated with complaints. The company's now dropped Stone from its Chinese ads and has apologized profusely, and so has she. Jeff Dyer of the Financial Times in Beijing says Dior is clearly worried.
Like a lot of luxury groups, Christian Dior have invested very heavily in China. They now have over 60 stores here. So it is very important for them not to alienate lots of Chinese customers.
The Chinese are touchy. Pro-Tibetan demonstrations during the Olympic torch relay in Paris led to a call for a boycott against all French goods. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
It's been postponed a few times, but someday soon, Americans will have to carry passports wherever they travel, including Canada and Mexico. New York has joined Washington State in trying to make things easier. It's introducing an enhanced driver's license, which will double as a passport. Lisa Roth has more.
All American citizens living in New York will be eligible for the new license, which will let people travel to Mexico, Canada, and the Caribbean without a passport. The state's Department of Motor Vehicles will issue the document. It'll cost more than a plain old license, but less than an actual passport. It's designed to speed up the notoriously slow border crossings between the U.S. and Canada to make cross-border business faster and more efficient. Patricia Eddington is a New York Assemblywoman. She's skeptical of the new plan.
It'll probably make the line go a whole lot faster, but I don't just necessarily want the line to go faster. I want to make sure that all of those commercial trucks and vehicles are checked.
The new and improved license will look similar to the current one. The state says it should be available by the end of the summer. In New York, I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
Book Expo America kicks off today in Los Angeles. It's the largest book trade show in the country. Book retailers have seen better days, particularly independent stores, but a few have bucked the trend. Commentator and independent bookseller Carrie Slattery tells us her story from the office loft above her store.
Our little urban neighborhood in Los Angeles is abuzz these days. Passersby are actively curious about the renovation going on at the small storefront next to my bookstore. When I put up a little sign saying it's going to be an expansion, they're incredulous and thrilled. Not another restaurant, not a big chain ice cream parlor, but our very own neighborhood bookshop is doing well enough to grow, even while many independent stores are struggling as consumers flee to big box stores and Amazon. I keep thinking our situation must be unique, that the reason we're surviving after 11 and a half years as an independent bookstore must be due to our offbeat neighborhood, or that we have a sympathetic landlord, or I've just been particularly conservative with how we've handled our expenses. Maybe it's that we're responsive to our neighborhood's needs. After all, we host readings by the local middle school writers club every year and draw top literary names. Our store cat, Lucy, who passed away recently, had a cult following. Customers even donated funds for her vet bills. But independent stores have always done these little things. What's happening now is this. More than any other time in recent years, there's a growing national consumer awareness that big may not be better, both in small towns as well as in large cities. I'm seeing customers consider the environmental, personal, and community impact of buying from locally owned neighborhood businesses. They're realizing that there's value in keeping their money, as well as taxes that support services in their own community. People are starting to look around their neighborhoods a little more, and we want to be there for them when they do. Sure, with this expansion comes new risks, but that's the beauty of writing your own story.
Oil's back up to $130 a barrel this morning. There's a theory going around that huge investors, dubbed index speculators, are a major reason for the price. We visit now with Chris Farrell, our economics correspondent. Chris, index fund and speculators don't sound like they belong together.
It doesn't seem to go together. It's an oxymoron. And I don't think that this is a major factor behind the price increase. I remember in the 1990s, there was a lot of commentary that it was the equity index funds, the embrace of equity index funds by pension funds and other institutional investors that was driving prices higher, not the fundamentals. You know, yeah, there's a little bit of an impact on prices, but the CFTC, Commodity Futures Trading Commission, and a lot of other people have looked into it pretty closely, and they come away and they say, look, yes, there can be some sort of short-term price movements, but what's really driving prices? It's that old Mr. Supply and Mr. Demand.
But I'm getting emails from people who are saying, you know, I don't really buy the whole supply and demand thing outright, that there are some other factors going on here.
Well, I think that's absolutely true. Now, for example, the index speculators, let's just use that term since I love it. They must be having a little bit of influence on prices. You can't have $1 billion a day going in and not having perhaps some kind of an influence. And, you know, I know we've talked about dollar weakness and fears of inflation driving more money into commodities. But underlying it all in this market, whether it's food, oil, or other commodities, is that the demand, and particularly because of fast growth in the emerging markets, is outrunning supply. There's just some real reasons to believe that it's very difficult for a lot of the producing nations to ratchet up their supply over a long period of time.
Well, for smaller investors, should they be following the lead of these big institutional investors and getting into these index commodities funds?
I think there are two statements that can be made forcefully. First, for most individual investors, it makes sense in today's world to add to the diversification through a commodity index mutual fund or an exchange-traded fund, which is another way of buying a commodity index. The second statement is, with prices at the level that they're at, I think the timing is off. So I'd wait.
All right, Chris Farrell, our economics correspondent. Thanks.
Thanks a lot, Scott.
Right now, you can buy gasoline for about $2 at some stations in New York. Now, before you get in your car and start driving there, that's $2 for a half gallon. The state is allowing older gas stations to charge by the half gallon because their pumps won't go beyond $3.99. These are those pumps that have gears and spin. New York is requiring these stations to get new pump computers, which cost about $400 apiece. In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.